This is the Empower Podcast. Released January 16th, 2023. Episode 615. Augmented Engineering.
Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Dave Jones from the EEV blog.
And I'm Chris Gamble of Contextual Electronics.
2023.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. New year. Happy New Year.
Funny that.
Dave's off in the middle of nowhere. This is a very first. This is the first in a while. Dave's like got like these clandestine audio sounds behind him. He just had a twin prop plane go overhead. So
I did. I had it.
He's out in the bush.
Yep. I'll go and walk about.
Yep. There you go.
Although not far enough that there's no internet here. I do have like satellite internet or something.
Oh, thank God. I mean, yeah.
Yep. So it's satellite through Wi-Fi. So this could be our worst nightmare.
You know, vacation with Wi-Fi, it's what separates us from the animals. So, you know.
Right. Oh, no, here comes the plane again.
Oh, yeah. They're just circling. You know, they found you, Dave. You gotta watch out.
They geolocated me.
That's right.
I do play that game. I do play that geolocation game on Twitter. I actually post photos of myself. And I'm amazed. Yeah.
People get it right?
Actually find me. Yeah. Yeah, people find me. All right. So, yeah, it's quite amazing.
I guess if you go to like popular enough spots, they know you're still in Australia.
If I post a photo of some grass or something, then, you know, they're not exactly
right.
going to get
me. Yeah, yeah.
But I can remember one of my viewers sent me because I think I put a call out, maybe like a sort of a half jokingly call out. Oh, send me a photo and I'll try and guess where it is. You know, because I was trying that, you know, there's geolocation software and stuff.
Sure. Yeah. There's like almost like a Wordle for geo spots, right?
Right. Yeah. And I can remember I spent like half a day on it and I couldn't, like, I thought I'd narrowed it down. Like I thought, you know, but I couldn't get the exact, like I thought, like I did actually, I thought I had it, but then I couldn't find a matching photo that was similar. Like it was overlooking this city at night or something. And I thought I had it. Like, cause I actually tracked down like the person of where they lived and start like the person who sent it to me. So I tracked down where they lived.
Yep.
And then I figured out, well, you know, like they were like, where would they like holiday around there or something, or where would they drive to? So like, and I narrowed it down, but I couldn't get it in the end. And then he appeared on one of my live shows once and he said, "Hey, I'm the guy who sent you that geolocation photo thing." And I said, and he said, "Do you really want to know where it was?" And I went, "Yeah, okay." And it was, sure enough, it was one of the places that I had picked.
Oh, no way.
It was actually Universal Studios Hollywood.
Oh, yep. That's...
It was Universal Studio. It was like up on the top of the, you know, there's a lookout or something up there.
Uh-huh,
like,
yeah,
and
yeah.
there's like yep. this train station, like, you know, one of those, you know, trains they take you around on, you know, on the tours and stuff.
Oh,
and,
yeah,
sure. And I had it nailed, but I couldn't get a photo from that location. So that was actually one of my picks, which I spent hours on. That was half of my day. Half a day of life.
Ways to waste Dave's day. Yeah,
yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, you can get sucked down the rabbit hole. And...
I've tried those games before, like where you try and like guess it based on just like random Google Maps. You know, they drop you in the middle of a the farmland.
Yeah. Yep, I've tried.
The
that.
Best you ever get is like maybe you get like the language on a sign.
Oh, something like that.
You can kind of like seek around a little bit. That's a tough thing, though. Some people are really good at that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, they're great. So, yeah, I've actually watched quite a few videos. There's actually entire channels out there devoted to...
Oh, no way. Okay.
Yeah, solving those things. So there you go. If you want to waste more of your life watching...
yeah, watch other people do it. Yeah.
Instead of wasting your life listening to the Amp Hour. So,
well, but, hey, yeah, hey,
people
hey,
are
now.
Usually, nah, people we usually
are
do
the
well.
Premier
we are the
news
premier.
Source. Of,
yeah.
Well, what are we going to talk about if you're on vacation? I mean, I guess what you ended up the year with, what I ended up the year with, I mean, that sort of stuff. Or what are you thinking here? What have you been up to? It's been a while since we chatted. I took a hell of a break.
You took a sabbatical. Yep.
I had meant for Dave and I to record. But I was then...
No, you were in a blizzard or something, weren't you?
I was expecting to be back home, but I got stuck in Buffalo where I grew up. And yeah, it was like a huge, the 2022 blizzard, basically like a meter and a half of snow plus like sustained winds above, you know, like that's how you define a blizzard. And so, yeah, even though the snow started to clear up, the airport just like, we're like, nah, we're not going to open today. But I was supposed to fly out. So I got home much later.
Yikes.
So always bring a microphone with you where you're going. That's the lesson here, folks.
Well, I'm currently using my old school Samson CO1U and it's in a shoe. Sitting in a shoe. Well, and the shoe is...
That's the tip. That's the hot tip from the former traveler. You know.
And the shoe is currently sitting on my laptop keyboard. So I've got... I'm sitting on a deck chair. So, yep.
Relax.
It's classy with a pillow.
That's
good.
That's good.
There you go. Hear some noises.
Yeah, the kids screaming in the background. That'd be good. You said you're on a farm where there's kangaroos as well, right?
Yeah. There's kangaroos. Can't see any at the moment, though. But But it's what is it? 10 a.m. in the morning, 9:30 a.m. in the morning. So they're usually they usually come out at, you know, dawn and dusk. So it's kind of past that. They're kind of hiding. So
makes sense.
Yep. You saw a bunch of kangaroos while you were here. You ticked that one off.
On the Canberra
you saw
trip.
About 50 in a paddock.
Yeah, that's right.
For those who don't know, we went on that road trip to Canberra to the deep space tracking complex.
Yep.
And we put the in the GPS. We put the deep space tracking complex in the GPS, and we turned up, and it was this like visitor. It was this other like visitor center or something.
Yeah, we were in the wrong spot.
Yeah, we were totally in the wrong spot, and there was a whole paddock full of kangaroos, and there you go.
Check. There we go. All done. Yeah, that was like going on 6 years ago now. It's been a while.
Jeez. Yeah.
Yeah. Time for you to come to US, man. Time for you to come to the US.
Yeah, sure. It's gonna happen.
Yeah.
Drag the family to the US. They're not gonna let me go there on my own.
No, of course not. No, they should come. They should come and hang out, you know. Last week we did a impedance matching episode. It was great. We brought up your video about AI and GPT taking over the world.
Oh, it's right. Yeah.
I'm not sure I agree with you, but you know, I'm also not sure if I got enough credit for showing you how to use Midjourney, but it's okay.
Thank you very much. Yes, I do enjoy Midjourney. It's great.
Yeah, it's been fun to play with.
Yep. What don't you agree with? What don't you agree with?
Well, like, you know,
I was being a bit hyperbolic, you know. I'm like,
of course,
I'm not.
That's kind of your thing.
Like, when I say art is finished, right? Like it's over. I don't mean it's over. Right?
No, it's like augmented. Yeah. It's changed. It's another
augmented
thing there.
It's changed. Like, there are many jobs which I would have gone to a graphic artist before, and now I just wouldn't bother.
Yeah.
So
I think that's the thing. Like, and that's I do agree with. I think it's like sweeping up kind of the low hanging fruit, not the low hanging fruit, but like the menial work of certain industries, right?
Totally.
And not to say that that's not, people might be earning a living from it, but there's always that kind of like job creation destruction type of stuff. You know, I think about like certain automation activities generally, right? If we move away from AI and, you know, chatbots and stuff like that, and you just think about general like menial tasks that become kind of automated either by software or like IoT type stuff, or, you know, it's like, yes, it is in theory taking a job, but it's also usually moving people up the value chain, and they have more coverage area to like, okay, instead of going to check, you know, the pool water temperature on 20 pools in a day, now they become the pool manager for a region. And it's like, you know, is that destroying a bunch of jobs? Yeah, maybe, if you count those, you know, the five people it replaced with one person as like destroying four jobs. But like, also, like, there's nothing that's going to stop the march of that progress, because there's always the drive towards efficiency, I feel like.
Yep. But there's also like the art of, like, as we've discussed before, the art of actually making it do what you want. And most people aren't going to
agree
with to learn that.
I did agree with that.
Right? Most people aren't going to put the effort in to learn that. So they're just going to go to an artist who is just then going to use, is then going to know how to drive the engine to generate what
maybe
they want.
Maybe you should explain that for people who haven't seen the video as well, what you were saying there. Because I think that's a salient point.
Oh, you want me to explain it?
Yeah, yeah. You explain what you mean by the driving the engines, right?
Like, right, because you can just say, like, I used an example on Twitter. I wanted a bunny rabbit with wearing a top hat while eating a banana or something. I don't know. And it does it. Mm-hmm. No, it was a rabbit sitting on a plant while wearing a hat or something like that. And it actually did it. Okay. It actually generated that. But in a lot of cases, probably the majority of cases, you can't do it that simplistically. Like, you really have to get you have to tell it that you want to render instead of a painting type, you know, because it can do different styles of art and stuff like that. So you have to, you know, say, oh, I want a realistic render or something like that. And then you've got to put the things in a certain order. Otherwise, it's going to prioritize, you know, certain things first before, you know, so it's going to think about, oh, okay, I'm going to generate this first and then add that later over the top. Yeah. And it's back to front and stuff like that. Yep. So there's an art in doing the script to generate exactly what you want, to actually tweak it. Otherwise, you're just going to end up with something random, which will probably look funky, right? But, you know, it's not exactly what you wanted. And that's the point.
Yes.
So,
I have found specifically, so I use a lot of Midjourney stuff like Dave's been doing too. And like, I find there are certain things that I am absolutely incapable of getting it to. to actually output. So like, here's an example. I have a webinar coming up where I had this idea where I was like, okay, we're talking about like low power. And for some reason, my stupid brain's like, oh, that's like sipping power. Like, oh, I can be so clever about this.
Okay.
And like, so it's like sipping power. So I made so I was like, okay, I want to have like a, like what looks like a Duracell battery, but it's actually like a can. And then there's this curly straw coming out of it. For some reason, I don't know why, I spent probably an hour and a half trying to get it to render a straw.
Wow.
And I could not, it'll do a straw, but it won't do like, you know, the curly Q straw that was in my head. And for some reason, I got so frustrated. I spent my whole lunch hour doing it. I was just like so frustrated. And at the end of the day, what I did is I just generated I'll send you the post that you have it here too. I just generated most of the art. And then I said, you know what? I can just do the old
Photoshop,
paste it in there. I can just Photoshop it in. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And like that to me is a, you know, it's the hard part is definitely done already, right? The hard part was to generate. Exactly. So I like rendered like a, what kind of looked like a D cell battery with like kind of was looking like a Duracell, you know, just kind of like the copper top style coloration. And I wanted it to be in a kitchen and I wanted to have like light coming in through a window, like all of that stuff. It was awesome with. But then everything else I had to like edit. And so like, again,
I can see it now. Yeah.
Yeah. So like I was trying to, and people should sign up for this webinar too. I was trying to do all this stuff and get this in there, to take it to the electronics analogy here, I would say this is like, if I was trying to build a switch regulator, now the AI generator engine basically is like moving me up a level where now I go and buy the switching regulator, like the finish. I'm not building the switching regulator from scratch. I'm not sketching the switching regulator out on a piece of paper. I am buying that finished good and implementing it. And now there's a whole other set of problems because now I've moved up a level and I need to, I want to just trigger this one little detail there, right? I need to implement the, you know, the soft start and it's not in this chipset. Okay, well, I got to go and cut and paste this thing in there. It sounds trivial.
I know.
But like there isn't the value that I previously may have had being able to draw a battery on a table and have it in there. I've now moved up a level and that's just kind of done now. And I can go and focus on some other stupid stuff that I've implemented for myself. You're like putting a curly straw into it. Yeah. You know, that sounds stupid, but that's kind of how I like imagine a lot of this similar like augmentation is it's moving up a level, like letting someone else do the silicon piece. That's kind of how I think about it in terms of electronics.
That's what a lot of people have tried to argue with me on Twitter and elsewhere in the comments. They've tried to argue that, oh no, it's not, you know, it just generates this garbage. But you don't understand that, like, I was not even able to generate garbage before, right? I am not an artist, right? I cannot produce a photorealistic photo of a rabbit. Okay. Right. Now I can. Right. I've gone from zero artistic skills to like the level is actually enormous. right? Yeah. And then, yes, I can use my feeble Irfan view or, you know, Photoshop skills to actually, then I want to, you know, overlay a transparent PNG over the top of that or something to kind of like finish it off. Yeah. Yes. It's like, you have no idea what capability this is just given a hack like me. I've gone from nothing to, you know, at least semi-serious ability to actually produce stuff.
Right. And I think the other thing then too is that it becomes a sliding scale now too, right? And it's like, now this is a tool that is available to everyone. So again, to take it back to the electronics analogy, right? Whereas maybe only a Jim Williams could implement this crazy ass, all, you know, silicon level, you know, single transistor isolated thermocouple circuit, right? And now TI comes up with that same kind of circuit that's as good or maybe even a little worse, but still accessible
to
everyone.
It's close, yeah.
It's now accessible. Okay, well, now that problem's kind of solved. There's a cost to it, but it's kind of solved. And we've moved on. Now, we might bemoan the lack of knowledge. We have, you and I have bemoaned the lack of knowledge that that person that knows how to do that circuit. But more than likely, that person goes and works at the company that now is producing that circuit, like the TIs of the world. And in doing so, it becomes accessible to everyone. I feel like I'm trying to like promote AI here. I'm not really trying to, but what I'm really trying to say is, I'm terrible at art, just like Dave's terrible at art, and I need art.
It's like everything in the engineering chain, right? You can do phenomenal engineering without using anything more than Ohm's law, right? You can do phenomenal engineering without knowing how to lay out a PCB because there's, you know, companies that do that, or you can just, you know, wire modules together, or you can, you know, you can develop these hugely complex systems, right? Without any of the deeper underlying knowledge. You can do a lot of practical stuff. It doesn't mean you're the world's best, you know, and like you cellular stuff that you're dealing with, right? All this Internet of Things cellular stuff. You don't
need to know so much stuff under the hood. Yeah, there's so much stuff under the hood that I have no visibility into, and I don't want to, and I just want it to work.
Exactly.
And like, oh my God, I
and you're a decent engineer. You're an experienced engineer, and you still don't have any clue how that works under the hood, right?
You would just never do anything though, right? Or you would have to work at such a massive company that is so vertically integrated that you have a silicon designer all the way up to someone writing software on a cloud server and you're building all the servers in between. Like, it would have to be the biggest company in the world, right? This is just part of interoperability.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's still arguments against this stuff, but.
Oh, well, there is. But now it's given anyone with any half decent Photoshop skills, right? They can combine that with Midjourney or some other, you know, AI art generator thing, and they're they have leveled up so much, it's crazy, right? Sure, the exact finished product from the AI is not perfect, but then you combine that with your Photoshop skills to like finish it off, and boom, you've opened a whole new area instantly, like without having to learn anything more than a couple of command line, how to drive a command line, right?
Yeah. It's just, I think, I think really it brings up the entire, like, I think we're going to be more discerning as consumers of art, if you want to call us consumers of art. I think we're going to be more discerning generally. Like, well, I think I'll be able to look at some things and be like, oh, that's probably generator versus, you know, maybe not. I don't know. It doesn't really matter. But I feel like there's just going to be more in the art area. There's going to be more stuff out there. And so we're going to have more expectations that art is attached to a thing and that it's, you know, and I'm really going to say blog art versus just art as a category, you know, so like there's just more expectations that it's possible to do these sort of things. So it'll become less special, right? It will actually grab our attention less, I'm guessing.
Right.
Unfortunately, you know, for better or worse.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think the more interesting stuff is on the code side of things, like all of the
I only touched on that in that video. Apparently can do almost any language. Well, I'm not going to say it can do any language, but it's trained on a whole bunch of them. So
I was talking to someone about this recently too, and I think so then like, okay, so now it can write code. Okay, cool. I'm not great at code, but even the code that I'm writing these days, it's actually just kind of like understanding code that's out there and pasting it together. I'm pretty sure that as of right now, right? So I could probably say, hey, ChatGPT, can you write me something in Zephyr? And it would probably be like, would output like something that is, that would work in Zephyr, the real-time operating system that I'm often working on. And it would work. And then if I said like, hey, can you go and write me a new driver in Zephyr for this new part from Analog Devices? I don't think it's going to do that yet. And so like,
right. No, but that'd be powerful, wouldn't it?
That would be super powerful. But you know what? That's work that I want to get off my plate anyways. Like, so I guess there's a lot of concern about that sort of thing, but like, I see all of these things as like supplementing solo engineers.
Yeah.
And like,
same here. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. There are definitely downsides to like, you know, bias in AI engines and all of the potential. There's pages and pages and pages of why certain AI things are bad, and that's fine. But like, I see it as a tool for like doing more stuff myself and like reducing barriers to like communication between myself and other engineers. If I can like prototype something before I go talk to a professional firm engineer, be like, hey, it kind of looks like this, and I can like help it to formulate my ideas, I'm still going to use that professional firmware engineer to make it really good. And so,
to polish it, of course, but to get something off the ground and, you know, at least it doing a hello world or something like that, you know, which is half the challenge, especially if you're doing a complex system, then.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. And I think, so like, I see a lot of this stuff as like, you know, we've talked about on the show before, we've talked about like layout and like how AI might play into that stuff at some point. Like, I think it's all going to be supplemental for the next many years, right?
Yes. Yeah, totally.
It might move faster than we've predicted, and you know, better or worse, fine, whatever. But like, there's still like system capabilities. Like, I still needed to define what I even want in the system, and being able to interact with people that don't know what they want in a system, and understanding systems, and like, so. I'm not personally very, very worried about this sort of thing. You know, like that's usually where people start is like, oh no, what about my job? It's like, look, there's a lot of work to be done. So I'm not super worried about that sort of thing, but it will be interesting to see kind of that. I think we're very rapidly entering the age of co-working with these AIs. And I think then it's a question of, that is co-working, right? Collaboration.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
It's collaboration. It's augmentation.
Well, like people use the example, like, well, is it AI if I use Photoshop's, you know, cloning tool? You know, like it's got all those really advanced tools, right? Yeah, to like fill in backgrounds and stuff. That's like kind of like,
I mean,
you know, how
you
is
don't
that
know how many photos
different?
I've edited of myself to just like have fuller lips and just like really, you know, smooth skin put on Instagram.
So you can think of it as, so if you're worried, you can think of it as just a more advanced version of, you know, a tool that just allows you to do stuff.
I think it is. I think we're entering that age of augmentation. And then, you know, what does that mean then moving forward? And really, when do we exit that age of augmentation? That's what people are really talking about.
Augmented engineering.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Is that the name for this episode?
I think it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty good.
Dave's,
I like it.
Dave's going to be a cyborg.
Yep. Oh, boy.
Here's how crazy this stuff has gotten, folks. I would trust Dave to make blog art now. Like that's a big deal.
Yeah, I know. That's it. See, and people think it's a nothing burger. It's taken me from a nothing to Chris Gamble thinking that I'm a capable blogging artist. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's nuts. Yeah. Like seriously, I had like
zero
ability, right? The only ability I had before, okay, I can take a picture of, I can steal a picture of a rabbit from Google Images, okay, but I've got to make sure it's transparent, and then I've got to overlay it on the background that I want, and then I've got to add like a hat on top, and then I've got to add
Right.
No.
Yeah. No. I think that's a very realistic look at kind of how I do it too. Sometimes I would trace over top of things as well in Inkscape.
Yeah. No. I'm real. Like you have no idea. Like I'm still Earthen View level, right? I'm like, that's how poor I am.
I am excited. So I will say for people that are listening that if you're worried about Dave and I talking about this, I think we're going to keep talking about it. In fact, I have a guest that's supposed to come on at the end of this quarter that's kind of doing some augmented layout type stuff. I was kind of skeptical about it. I talked to them and they said it wasn't right to talk to, they wanted to wait a couple months to showcase what they're doing. But like by the end of like a 20-minute call, I was pretty sold on the concept because again, it was like a measured thing, right? If someone came in and they told me like, I'm going to do you put in, you know, two data sheets and I will output a layout for you. It's like that doesn't make any sense. But if it's like, I'm going to augment some of your design stuff. Yeah, that is a good start. Will that company maybe do more and more of layout for me over time? Yeah, that's possible too. But I don't really, you know, I think maybe one thing is that we, you know, I've held on to the identity of electrical engineer a long time. But like, if I just think of myself as like a person solving problem with electronics, then I really don't care if I'm doing firmware or hardware or layout or, you know what I mean? Like, it's just like,
right.
If you're just trying to get to that end product, I think you're going to be more effective. You're going to use more tools in your tool belt. And some of them might be some of these engines that are coming out.
I agree.
Yeah.
Can we talk about something else now?
Yeah, totally. I found out what trade shows I'm going to be at this year. I'm going to be at Embedded World again, which is in March, and I will be at Embedded
Open
Source.
That's
Germany,
is it? Is that the
That's German? Right. That's yep. Nuremberg. Yeah. Yep. I really loved that show last year. I mean, aside from getting COVID. I think it's one of the best trade shows I've been to. And I would recommend, you know, if people are in Europe and
I would love to go to it. Yeah, but
yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And then I will be at the Embedded Open Source Summit, which is, I went to the Zephyr Developer Summit last year. This is kind of like a combination of that plus Embedded Linux Conference and Automotive Linux Conference. And so that's in Prague in June. So I will be at those two shows if all goes well. And hopefully without COVID afterwards, if all goes well, we'll see how that goes.
Surely you're immune now.
Yeah, right, right. I would love to hear about other, you know, I've found that other shows in the US have been kind of on the downside. If people know about other shows, I'd love to know about them. I'm always on the lookout for that.
Well, I just found out, I think John Oxer mentioned it, that there was a Maker Faire in Melbourne. I thought Maker Faire was dead. Yeah.
Yeah, I think they're...
He just went to a Maker Faire in Melbourne and it looked like pretty decent size. And I didn't hear a thing about it. So,
I don't know. Yeah,
but
maybe next time.
They went bust, right? I'm sure my memory isn't that bad.
I think
they like the actual brand went bust or something.
No, it's not like bankrupt or anything. But the big Maker Faire has not come back, and I don't think they'll come back. So that was like the big ones were in the U.S. at least, and like they were centrally managed as well. So it's kind of like I think of it kind of like a.
Yeah, you had to license
McDonald's.
The name, right? You had to end up.
Yeah, like what's a McDonald's model?
There.
Like franchise, like a franchise model. I kind of think about it like that.
Right.
And the centrally managed ones, I believe, are gone. And those were like New York and San Francisco, I think. But I think.
So how's this little tin pot one in Melbourne happening?
Well, that's a community-based one. So the community-based ones were kind of all over the states and all
over
the world.
Yeah, but you still need approval to use the name and everything, right? And the logo. And I'm pretty sure it was branded as
that's
Maker
right.
Faire. So,
but the company's not gone, I don't think. I think it's just they're not running the conference themselves anymore. This is all bad memory on my part. So I do believe, because I think make.co is still there. I think it's still a site, make.co, yeah. Yeah, so make.co is still there. They still have a publication, but I think it's just significantly scaled back. So
okay, interesting. Yeah, I just like it didn't even pop up on my radar until it had happened.
Yeah, that's too bad. Yeah.
Yep. Oh well. Otherwise, I probably would have gone. I think. So you know, it's only Melbourne.
Yeah, that's a pretty short flight from you, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's not far. I could do it as a day trip, like you know.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Dave's still on the lookout for the best Aussie tech conference. I still think he's gonna have to start one, but
yeah, I know. I'll probably have to start one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Someone's got to take the bullet. Yep. Mm-hmm. It's gonna have to be me. Yep.
Yeah, I'd say you bankroll it and then let someone else set it up for you.
Right.
You got tons of money. Come on, man.
Oh, well,
some of that DMM money.
Right.
That DMM money.
Yep.
All that cryptocurrency I keep hearing about. Oh boy. Not going there. Sorry. I didn't say it. I didn't say it.
It's doing just fine. Don't know what you're talking about.
Good. Good. Yep. Good. Good. I just meant I didn't want to talk about it.
Oh boy. Yep.
Yeah. What else is what else should we talk about then? I guess we have a list of things.
Which I have not looked at. So...
I haven't either. Oh, actually I mentioned this in the last show, but it still blows my mind that it's a thing. So Qualcomm Snapdragon Satellite enables two-way messaging from the Iridium network. So basically, like, these new chipsets are like talking, and we Alvaro Prieto was on the show last time, and he works for a company that talks to satellites regularly with like actual big Iridium modems. But like, like phones talking to satellites. For some reason that like that blows my mind. I don't know like if that's other people too, but
yeah, it is. But it's like hundreds of bits per second. It's like, you know, Voyager space probe level data rate.
Yeah, that's great. Text messages and no emojis. What's better than that? They should make us do a T9. You know, like that's the real measure.
A T9.
T9 was like the old Nokia. That's how you like input text using a keypad. Was T9.
Nope.
Was it called T9? I think it's called T9.
Doesn't ring a bell.
You know, like, you remember how you used to put text messages into your Nokia phone on using the keypad? You know, it was only like 1 through 0.
Oh yeah. Well, they have the three letters on each number of the keypad. Is that what you're talking about?
That's right. It's called predictive text. So that was like this. That was the system where it would be like, you know, you type in, you know, you hit 888 or 8, and then it got to T, and then it's like, then you put in an H, and it's like, oh, he's probably trying to say the,
and then show you
stuff on the screen.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you don't have to type out everything, but just most of it. So that's T9. Yeah.
Oh, okay. There you go.
So I feel like that would be, if you're going to talk to satellite, you know, you got to do it through T9.
But this is one of the things where people think, oh, we're just, you know, 6 months, a year away from having, you know, massive data rates directly from phones to satellites. It physically is not possible unless you have like massive power levels. Like it is simply the power, you know, it's a power level problem. Yes, you can do text messages. Yes, you can do, you know, voice. Maybe. We have a low flying.
Oh, wow. Nope. No. They're coming for Dave, folks.
Yep, they've geolocated me. But like, it's just one of those things that's just, it's, you can confidently say it's not going to happen because they've just got massive power requirements. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, and antenna requirements too, like in that.
Oh, yeah. No, totally. Yeah. RF exactly. Signal, like, right, it's, so. You're not going to be able to pull your shoe phone out of your pocket and start doing a streaming HD video directly from a satellite. It's just, no.
Yep. Yep.
I mean, how many watts does the Tesla Skynet thing take? It's like, what is it, 800 watts or something? It's enormous power requirements just for that transceiver dish.
Oh, really? The one, actually, the ground station for it you're talking about?
Yes, yeah, the ground station thing. I think it's like 800 watts or something. It's enormous power. Maybe it's not. Hang on. I'll try and get it live here. But yeah, power requirements are enormous. God,
yeah, Starlink.
What's it actually called?
About.
Tesla.
Starlink. Yeah.
Starlink.
Yeah,
that's
it. I couldn't remember either. Dave and I are increasingly getting into like the, oh, I can't remember. And they're like, yeah, I can't remember either.
Oh,
Starlink.
Boy. Maybe we can ask ChatGPT.
There you go. Yeah, it could just be like our supplemental during the show. Be like,
oh, no, here we go.
It's
a bit over 110 to 150 watts on average, right? I mean, come on. Right. There's another thing that says 45 to 75 watts, right?
Yeah. I mean, if people go and look at the Shahryar teardown of the, I guess the older generation, because it was circular. Yeah, but he looks at the beam steering with that thing as well. And so, actually, I hadn't seen this. Wow, it's $110 for a month. That's crazy.
Oh, is it? U.S.
It's crazy that this is accessible. So there's a price on the U.S. site, at least. It says $110 for a month with a one-time hardware cost of $600. That's pretty bonkers. Like, you think
about
they're
like making a loss on that, apparently. Apparently they're making a loss on the hardware cost. Yeah, they're eating that.
Interesting.
I don't, long-term bet-wise, I don't think they're going to stay in business, but, you know.
I don't know. Like, you think about like how much this enables, like in terms of like there's so many remote areas in the U.S. Like, there's just so much. Yeah. I mean,
yeah,
I guess
but
I don't think you have coverage in the outback yet, but you think about like all the people in the outback.
Yeah, true.
I'm sure it will.
Oh yeah. Like, it's a great option, you know, but it's like, it's not cheap. And
how many
people actually use it as more and more people move into the bloody cities into the big smoke where there's coverage. You know, even cellular, once you've got cellular coverage, there's no point having Starlink, right?
True.
So, you know, because you can already get your 5G whatnots.
Sure.
So,
Soon 6G. Why not? Bring it on.
Even 4G. even 4G gives you just as capable, if not more capable, than Starlink, right?
I don't know about that, but I don't know the details.
All I know is that I can upload YouTube videos direct from my phone on my 4G connection, like in minutes.
Wow.
So it's like, you know, it's pretty quick.
Yeah, that's nuts.
Yeah.
Yes, we have a wealth of connectivity options. Which is why it's interesting in the next story that we're going to talk about here that a well-known connectivity provider known as Espressif decided, you know what? Actually, we're not going to put any connectivity on this upcoming part. The ESP32P4 was just announced, and it is a dual-core 400 megahertz with a secondary 40 megahertz, all RISC-V processors. And
yeah,
there's...
Why that secondary processor? Is that a low power jobby? So then you can have that running.
Low power, that's right.
You're right. Yep. And then that powers up the bigger beast of a core. And then, right.
Yep.
Okay.
Two cores, two beasts.
Right.
But so two the crazy beasts, thing is that it's an Espressif part known for their low cost Wi-Fi.
That's the only thing they were known for, right?
That's right. Right. Well, increasingly, they're getting into like the Thread game as well. And so like they're doing Bluetooth Wi-Fi, right? Thread. But now this is nothing. No connectivity.
Is it really cheap?
Well, there is no pricing on it yet. But yes, it's going to be really cheap.
Like how much silicon area does that save? Like how much cost per chip does that save? I'd really love to know.
Without the RF components?
Yeah, without all the RF stuff.
Yeah, I mean, pretty significant because you do have to have some inductors and stuff.
Well, that completely changes the node, doesn't it? Completely changes the process fab node, right?
That I do not know. But, I mean, they're not lacking in other stuff in here too, right? So if you look at like the system diagram, it's got every, you know, it's got DMAs, it's got codecs, it's got MIPIs for doing display stuff. It's got all the usual embedded DACs, ADCs. I don't like the ADCs for Espressif personally, but UARTs, you know, all that kind of stuff. And then it's like all this stuff. And then I'm guessing at some point they will also have a version where they tack on a, you know, Wi-Fi 6 or something as well. So I don't know. It's interesting. It's interesting to see what they're going for in this game. I'm guessing they're going for low cost, high power. I'm guessing they're kind of going after STM32 with this sort of thing. Maybe even like more like the NXP side of things, because it's like pretty beefy. You know, this almost looks like an infotainment kind of, like if it's got encoding for video, it's got like display drivers, things like that. Like they're like maybe a car manufacturer came to them and said like, hey, if you can make this 50 cents and you know, we'll buy a gajillion of them for all over our infotainment system sort of thing, but we don't want any connectivity because that'll drive the cost up. And then you think about the fact that it's RISC-V instead of Tensilica. And so then the licensing cost drops off too. And it's like, wow, I feel like this is a leading edge kind of component for me, because other manufacturers are going to look at this and be like, oh yeah, they don't pay Tensilica, or they don't pay ARM, any of those licensing fees.
Exactly.
That's
exactly.
Wow, we can really get cheap with this stuff. And like, I feel like this might be a leading edge for other chip makers to keep dipping toes into the RISC-V. Still do it. The RISC-V pond, I think.
Can we actually call it now? Is it too early to call it that the future, like everyone, like RISC-V is going to be like the thing?
Oh.
I don't think it's too early to call that. It's like everyone's doing it.
It's a little early, only because of implementation, right? So I think it's only early in that they're not out there broadly, right? So like in terms of like parts you can actually buy, which we've said on the show many times before, of like doesn't exist until it's on the shelf at DigiKey. Even this thing, this P4 isn't out yet. However, you know, Espressif has the C3, which is available in large volumes, which is one of their cheaper Wi-Fi parts, and it works well. It doesn't have as much memory. So like they're definitely like, they're not using up floor space for that sort of thing either, right? They don't have a lot of like onboard flash.
Yeah.
But it's out there and people are using it. So like, that's cool. And I keep seeing more and more RISC-V parts like pop up. You know, I think I might be buying you a bunch of RISC-V parts in a couple of weeks.
We'll see. To bring that up. Yep. You got to
No. We'll get to that later.
We'll get to that at the end of the show.
That's future episodes.
Can I actually shout out the PCB design in this article, Hackaday thing, which you sent me?
Sure.
This is a Wayscale built onto a PCB. So they're using the flex in the PCB as the scale. They've got a little sensor on the bit of the PCB that moves. So they've routed out slots on the PCB, and then they've put metal standoffs on there, and those metal standoffs would go to a plate on top, and then they're using the sensors on the PCB to actually get the strain, you know, and so they're using a strain gauge on the PCB material itself to actually measure the pressure on the actual PCB material.
That's pretty cool.
I don't know how linear that's going to be, but it's cool.
Yeah, and this is definitely using, I think it's using that cheapo 74HX7, yeah, the HX711. That's like a really cheap, like, that's what's in all of your cheap scales that are out there.
Oh, is it? Okay, right.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's not going to be super, super accurate on its own, but it's like, it's a 24-bit SAR? What's the other one? SAR and Delta Sigma. It's a Delta Sigma.
SAR, for those who don't know, is a successive approximation.
That's right. Yeah, that's the faster one. Yeah. This is a Delta Sigma. Okay. It's a 24-bit Delta Sigma, but like super cheap. And you can get them at like, you know, you can get them online at like from China directly, but like also like SparkFun uses them. And usually any of the like the kind of the strain gauge, cheapo weight scale type of things uses those HX711. So yeah, that is really cool. I was a little confused at first. I wasn't sure what you were pointing.
Yeah, no, I thought it was a segue article. I thought it was a related thing, but it wasn't. I was just sorry, Mike.
Yeah, no, this is very, very clever in that way, you know, to be able to, you know, and like being able to put those sensors directly in line in the PCB definitely can cut down on cost.
Yeah,
it's kind of like how low can you go though,
right? Yeah, but it's just novel. Like, you wouldn't do this in a proper product where you're actually trying to you want proper linearity and accuracy and stuff. It's just it's just not going to do the business. Yeah. But no, it's kind of neat. So,
yeah, that's cool. It's cool.
It's not the first time I've added a strain gauge to a PCB.
Tell me about other times.
For measuring flex.
Oh, really?
Start. So you would we'd super glue strain gauges to PCBs inside to see if any flex is transferring from the outside of the product to the inside. Like, because the PCB is inside like a shell, and we need to know, like, when the outside product bends, because it's actually designed to bend, and then we need to know if any of that's transferred inside. So,
right. I always think about products that have intended like plug unplug type cycles where you might be flexing a PCB or similar, even if it's like built into the case, and then like thinking about like the, what's that capacitor problem? Is it like the cracking that happens where sometimes because it's a rigid structure, if the PCB flexes underneath it, it can like crack the ends.
Ceramic capacitor. Yeah. That happens in multi-layer ceramic capacitors. Yeah. Because they've got, dozens or even hundreds of layers, and they're all rigidly connected to the end cans of that.
Yeah. Like metal.
The metal piece, and then that metal is soldered onto the PCB, and then you flex the PCB and it pulls on those little, even the tiny amount of flex, it just pulls on those end caps, and then it's brittle.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to remember, ceramic is brittle, right? And if it cracks, it'll reach a stress point where it cracks, and then you're either going to get a shorter capacitor and it catches on fire, or you're going to get an open capacitor, and, well, that could also ruin your day. So,
Right.
Yep.
Crazy.
Yep. Especially in those 100 mic cap in a bloody 0402 or something. Mm-hmm. And AVX is a spoiler alert. It's sitting on my mailbag shelf. I haven't opened it yet, of course, because I open them on air. But AVX, Ron Demko, former guest, he sent me some of their latest, like, I don't even remember, like 002, 001 parts or something. Like, that's it. But like the smallest parts they make. It's like,
getting out the microscope.
Exactly. I'm literally going to have to put it under my decent microscope to see these things. It's just, nuts. So that'll be.
I did think about that. My buddy who's in purchasing, he told me like how, you know, when you think about like the kind of the center of mass, if you think about like the center of mass of all the people that are ordering capacitors, that has to be shifting. Apple orders more capacitors than even conceive of using in my lifetime, right? And so when you think about manufacturing then, and like the manufacturers surely are going to have more of whatever Apple wants versus whatever, what Chris wants. You know, if I want 0805 with like some massive value because I'm, doing some large scale capacitance on a board. Apple doesn't care because they just need to bypass as small and as cheaply next to the part that they've put down, right? And so like, but you think about like the parts that are in the ecosystem and then even the surplus from an Apple that might be able to supply the rest of the ecosystem, that it just moves away from the technology nodes that you and I are used to, the 0805s, the 0603s, and that there are just more and more parts at the small scales that I personally will never use, you know? And so then the costs go up on the 0805s and those 603s because they might still have to make them for some people, but they don't want to because the volumes aren't there as much. Yep. So we pay a premium for being old and stodgy. Yeah, right. That's what I'm trying to say.
Got it. Well, some people avoid 0603s because they're valid. They either go 0805 or 0402.
Is it too small?
No, it's kind of like in that median, like it's kind of like the middle child everyone forgets. You know, because like nobody cares about like if you want decently small. In
I was the middle child.
Like, oh, well, you were. I was the middle child. There you go.
Yeah. I have so many scars.
Right. Okay. Some emotional. Yep. Scarring. Yep, come on, yep, Chris. Yep, let us out. Yep. Let it all out. Come on.
True, I just want to be an 0603 capacitor.
I just want to be my true self.
Yeah. That's right.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And actually, another reason not to use 0603 is because of the confusion with 0603, 0201, how the metric imperial lineup happens.
Oh, well, that's confusion over the board, isn't it? There's several overlaps in the imperial metric.
Oh, what are the other ones? I guess the one that I usually do is the 0603. Yeah. That's what I usually order 0603 capacitors, and I'm like, wow, these are really tiny. And they're actually 0201s.
Oops.
Yeah. Metric gets me again.
Ah, well.
Were there other, there's other crossovers though?
Yeah, I do believe there are other crossovers.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Okay.
You have to look at the list to get them all.
We need more decimals. That's what we should push for, more decimals.
No, we just need the world to stick to bloody imperial, please.
I believe when you were talking about 0805s and 0603s, you were actually talking to, wait, you said stick to imperial?
Yeah, stick to imperial.
Oh, stick to imperial. Oh, wow.
When it comes to component sizes, 0603, yes.
Yeah, I was arguing.
No,
yes.
No.
Uh-huh. Got it.
Yes.
You're a traditionalist. That's what you're trying to say.
Same with PCB grids and yep. I'm happy to go metric with whole sizes and PCB dimensions and stuff like that, but nope, otherwise, bugger off. Imperial, thank you very much.
All right.
Yep. I will die on that hill.
Did you see there was a guy that like... There was a guy that developed a PCB tool, and he was a US guy, and he's like absolutely refused to do any kind of like he would only release it with imperial measurements, and he had all these snarky responses about having metric measurements. I was like, oh, come on, man.
Yep. Nah. No, it's too entrenched. I don't know. You know, the metric components.
Yeah, I think once... You know, once all the boomers retire, that's what'll do it.
Yeah. Because like you know it by the number. It's not like, oh, it's, you know, it, like you don't think of it in terms of its actual dimensions. Because you already have the footprint, right? The footprint's just like it's done, right? And it's like otherwise you don't think about it. So, it's just annoying. Yep. I see no advantage to actually specifying them in metric. Because you got like your footprint is different, right? And go and specify your bloody footprint completely in metric if you want. I don't care. I just want a consistent numbering system for the actual component, right?
Yeah, I agree with that. And also, metric is fine with me. I prefer it for footprints. I switched to mostly metric for even trace widths and stuff because a lot of the PCB manufacturers are starting to do that. Not all of them, but like the Chinese ones are doing metric, and I'm like, all right, fine, whatever. Yeah. You know, like, and I'll make the switch over, but
I've done it too, but I still prefer, my fourth hour tracks. Thank you very much. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. I think it's for me, it's acted as a good, you know, I have to like stop and like ask myself if it's actually what I want when I'm going to order. And that actually is that's a good slowdown step. Any kind of step for that slows me down is actually good. Cause then I'm like, oh, I should check my work.
Yeah.
You know, I found a bunch of that.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah.
Is there a tool for that can like force your design to slow down every, you know, like once a day or something like that. So it forces you to go, oh, damn.
I believe that's called a boss.
That's called a right. No, they usually come in and just give you a different task.
Well, you know, or they say, Dave, we need to talk.
Oh, it's been a long time since that's happened to me.
Yeah, you haven't had a boss in a while, huh? You're ruled by the algorithm.
No, no, I'm talking 12 years now, 11 years.
Wow. He's off the chain, yep, folks. Totally. He's, he can't be controlled.
No, but for, yep, you know, good 25 years there, that was the thing, you know. So, yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we are in the season of what's it called? Yearly reviews. So.
All right.
Any tips for people that are doing yearly reviews, that are getting reviewed, what should they?
Oh, you know, as you in, you're talking about, like, job interview, yearly review.
Job progress and your boss is reviewing you for the year, maybe for bonuses or getting a promotion.
Oh, the snarky side of me wants to say, if you get a job performance review and they start putting wank words in there, just leave. Sorry, but you know, it's like,
well, that works great unless you, you know, have a house payment, right?
Yeah, you were hoping for something a bit more optimistic there.
No, not optimistic. Actually, I was just looking for stories. Oh, you know, right. Just thinking about my own past reviews. I, you know, like when I think about, I never, you know, I, this may come as a surprise to some people, but I'm not that great of an engineer. And so I never like, nobody was ever like, oh yeah, you know, you did so well this year, Chris. We're giving you a promotion to, you know, next, you know, you're skipping a level and we want to give you so much more. Like, I hear about that sort of thing, and you know, it's like, that's not me. I'm getting a solid 3 out of 5s across the board, which I don't know about in Aussie culture, but in like US culture, like it'd be like you'd get kind of like the middling grades on reviews, and then then you just know that you're not moving up that year.
Yeah,
okay,
course.
Fine, whatever.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. Is that how it was there?
Well, you can probably guess my performance in my job reviews.
Dave does not do well with authority. That section was well known.
Lacks tact in.
Yeah. Should be seen but not heard.
Right. Exactly. That was pretty much the gist of all my performance reviews. Yeah. Yep. It was like, yeah, that's why they locked me in the dungeon, you know. Yep. And I'm not joking. I that is a literal thing. I have photos of me in the dungeon. Like,
yeah, I believe it. Yeah, you're basically Milton. Yep. You know,
I'm Milton in Office Space. Who gets? Yeah, yeah.
There you go.
Totally. And then there's a photo of me surrounded. Like, I was down in the dungeon, and there's a photo of me surrounded by like 20 chairs, because this is where they stored all their chairs as well, excess chairs. And yep,
that's great.
Yep. Oh boy. They tolerated me is the answer, is, you know, they okay, Dave, we'll tolerate you for another year. You know, try and do better.
Yep.
Oh god.
Yeah, so like when I talk about, like, you know, trying to, you know, sell a solution to someone, or like you know, in my current role, I'm trying to convince people to use the thing that I'm working on. I always talk about like making people look good for their boss.
Yeah.
And that's like a common thing that I mention, because when I think about like those design reviews, or sorry, those performance reviews, like that's really where the rubber hits the road. Like if I could walk in to a performance review like that, and I could say like, hey, I did this demo and that allowed us to, you know, make $100 million more dollars last year or something like that. And then I say after that, I'm like, and I would like a 10% raise. Like if they say no, then you walk out the door, because like that's a very easy.
Right.
And so like when you think about like
how that's an easy sell. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So like, but that's the tough thing about that is my experience in like hardware is that you're always so far away from the, you know, being able to prove that what you did $100 million in sales. If you can connect those dots.
Oh, that's
though,
rare.
And
that's,
they don't give you that
that's
money.
Incredibly rare.
Yeah.
No, that's, you know,
it's tough, right? Especially if you're in a big company where like you're doing a component of a component that gets
exactly
put
into the, and that's
most
engineering jobs, let's be honest, right?
Is it, totally,
you're just,
yeah,
one,
oh, totally,
small,
right,
cog in a giant wheel.
Yeah. And but I think about in that case, like, so okay, you can't prove your end result that you spent, you know, 3 months, like 3 solid months doing good work, yep, on, you know, like, or like you did all the testing so that you prove that, you know, the mean time between failures is going to be like a million years or whatever, you know, whatever you tested, you know, and you did a good job as like, that's a true engineering job, right? Like long-term testing and proof and reporting and that sort of thing. So you can't, you know, you can do what you're expected to do on that kind of job. But then if you can somehow like walk into the meeting and be like, but now I can show that I did my job and I was more efficient at doing it. If you could have some kind of like demo to show that sort of thing and like, you know, like however you can show that like you provided value, maybe not at the end $100 million, you know, increase in business, but like even doing your job a little faster, like, hey, I pulled in Midjourney images so I don't have to go and talk to the art department anymore.
Right. I just made your art department redundant. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Unlikely, but you know, like that kind of thing. Yep. That's what I feel like you kind of have to do in order to grab attention during those time periods. It's just, it's tough. I mean,
one tip I've got is to try and be like, you know, you've got your job, right? So you're in your department or whatever. Try and like, instead of sitting in the cafeteria at lunchtime yapping away, right? Go to some other department and see if there's something that you can help out on or something like that. So when it comes around to review time, you can say, hey, I was actually, you know, I've helped out on all these other different departments. I'm a like, you know, I'm like very useful across many.
I'm an invaluable connector between subgroups. Yeah, right. Yeah, totally.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that's a good point. I'm the glue that binds them together, you know. Yeah. I'm the, yep.
That's right. Yep. Yeah. I think the other tip that people, especially like young career engineers, need to hear is you should leave your job. you should switch companies often because that's how you're going to get your biggest pay bump. If you're waiting for that 10%
you're
pay
not
going to
get it.
20% pay bump.
No, it's
the best way to do that is to move companies, and it sucks because it means you have upheaval and you know you
don't
might not
don't
like
do it too frequently because it looks bad on your resume. Some people say two to three years is like.
I'd say 3 years. You got to take the first year to really know a place and like get in there. But like after 3 years, like the best way to move. It sucks.
If you've got, like, if I'm looking at somebody's resume and they've got, and I know we want somebody for a project, like a 5 year long project, which some of our projects were, right? You know, because they, like, they've got long tail stuff, right? We want someone to stay on for a long time. Then if I look at a resume and they've moved every 2 years, then I know that's pretty consistent pattern, you know?
Right. Well, the history's going to change now, I'm sure. Yeah, they're going to settle down.
And a year is like, no, that's like, that's red flag kind of stuff, you know, if you're moving every year. Yep. In fact, I would say, like, if you've got a job that's like less than a year that you spend at, don't put it on your resume. Like, unless it's like, you know, like you got retrenched or something like that. And you can put the reason right up the top. I was retrenched, you know, or something, you know, the company folded or whatever. Then that's a fine excuse. That's if you simply left.
Right. Unless you're the reason that the company folded, then you shouldn't put
that's
that on
it.
There.
Oh, boy.
You know, that resistor value was too low. Yeah. The company folded.
Right. We relied on we relied on ChatGPT. It said it could do it. ChatGPT. It's like,
Turns out it cannot write Python very well.
And I've got a beautiful segue for this. If you're, you know, engineers
I had one too.
In that, this is what thousands of Twitter engineers said. I'm so valuable.
Oh, man, I knew you were going to go there.
You can read me like
before
a
before we go there. I do want
to
go there.
You have to acknowledge the quality of that segue, though. Thank you very much.
That was a fantastic segue. You know what, Dave? 5 out of 5 on your
performance review. Excellent.
Yeah. Right. Segue performance review. Yeah. 5 out of 5. Before we do that, because we're talking about jobs, if people want to work with me, there is a job opening that would work directly with me.
I will submit my resume tomorrow.
Sorry, your segues are great. Everything else, sales engineer and head of marketing. Probably the latter is not going to be listening, but I think a sales engineer might be. So I will link it if you'd like to work with me.
Oh, so the job is sales engineer. What?
It's like a FAE basically. FAE, it's listed as sales engineer, but it's like an FAE. Yeah. If my job is
dude, you almost totally lost everyone there by saying sales engineer.
I know a sales engineer.
You should have said FAE.
It's tough.
All right.
Yeah, FAE is close. Honestly, it is closer. In this case, like I'd be like an.
Oh, sorry. There's a magpie attacking another magpie. Yep.
Australia.
Yep.
Yeah. In this case, I would be like an application engineer, and they would be like a field application engineer. So.
Oh, okay. Does that mean you're getting away from the fieldy stuff now?
No. Like just that I'm kind of making references, right? So like if you think about an application node, it's kind of like a reference design. That's what I'm doing. And then this would be like taking reference designs and then like deploying them to real world locations and like helping people actually make them into real things.
Right. Cool.
Yeah. And it's still like feedback and like designing. There would still be some room for like designing reference designs as well, but probably more implementation of those things in the real world.
So do they bypass HR and just send their resume straight to you? Of course they do. Everyone knows that.
Sure. Yeah.
Everyone knows that.
Yeah. I will put my email address in the show notes. How about that?
Woo. Last time I did a job, last time I put up a job ad, I got like 500 resumes.
Oh my God. Yeah, but that was working directly with you and they didn't know what they were getting themselves into.
Yeah, yeah.
I hope not that many. All right, let's talk about how I owe you a bunch of chips, probably.
You owe me a bunch of chips. When was the date? Was it the 15th?
It was, I think actually the date is the release date of this episode.
Oh, okay, right.
Yeah, is that?
Yep. I don't think Twitter's going to fold.
The 15th is the day we release this episode.
No.
I don't think 4 days is going to do it.
No. Sorry, my Twitter, for those who want to know, I've been gaining followers like crazy. So I've been.
I've been gaining
followers, and the engagement is as solid as ever. So it hasn't collapsed.
Yeah, good for you.
So sorry, dude.
Twitter has not collapsed. I repeat, Twitter has not collapsed yet. I can still hold out hope.
Right. Oh boy.
Yeah. So let me know.
Yep. I will let you know.
Remember, it was $100 in chips. Do you want me to buy you these CH32s, the RISC-Vs?
Not yet, because I am.
How about any RISC-Vs of your choice?
Does it have to be a RISC-V?
I think it should be a RISC-V, but it's we'll just tag it at $100.
Well, I'll try and use a RISC-V in my latest design, but it's kind of like overkill. I think RISC-V is probably overkill for projects I'm currently working on. But if it's 10 cents, you know.
Yeah, I think it's really, I think that's the real thing is the novelty of it and trying it out.
Yep.
I do think a lot of people are. I saw Greg, our old friend Greg Davil, is working on this part, and he had linked me some resources. I got pulled away to something else. There's still like the tool chain is still kind of underdeveloped versus like, you know, looking at other chips that are.
Is that the Chinese one? Because I just got that before I left. I was going to do a video before I left on it. You know that little demo.
Yeah, that is that one. Little, yeah, the CH32-003.
Yep. I finally got it.
CHV.
So yeah.
Oh, there it is. CH32V003F.
Yep.
So that's the part number.
Yep.
Yeah, so you and I have that same thing.
Yep. Have you actually
used... No, that's I got pulled off on other things.
Okay. So I'm going to use that's probably be the first thing I do when I get back is have a play around with that.
Yeah. Okay. Yep,
going to install it cuz I actually downloaded all the tools but I didn't have they've got their own compiler and stuff like that. It's on a different website but they're affiliated with it or something. So
that's right. Yeah, Moon River. MOUN.
Moon River. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Which is kind of a cool name, you know.
Yeah. That's not bad. Yeah.
Maybe they asked ChatGPT, "What is a cool English name Western English name?"
Oh man, that would be much better. I swear, the more I look at like Amazon products, you know, that are just coming straight from China, it's just like they're just choosing the smallest number of letters they can get away with,
right.
And then they have no. Like they don't even make sounds at this point. It's crazy. Like I've seen some real doozies.
Yeah. Oh boy.
Let's see though. Let's see what ChatGPT says.
Oh, okay.
What is a good name for a compiler company?
For a compiler company, yes. Ask it. I don't have a tab. I don't have a ChatGPT tab open. Hang on.
Chat.
There we go.
GPT. Okay. Try.
Hang on. I have to verify that I'm human first. Ironically, I've got to verify that I'm human. So.
Yeah.
Oh.
What is a good name for an embedded compiler company? Oh, here we go. A good name for an embedded compiler company would be something like Firmware Forge or Embed Compiler Technologies or Micromate Compiler. Which effectively communicates the company's focus on embedded systems and compilers. Not a bad answer, right. ChatGPT.
That's all right. Yeah.
Did you see my screenshot? I asked about how to do a layout in KiCad, and it referred me to my own video series.
Oh yes, I saw that. Yeah, I thought that was funny. Yeah, yeah, you've finally come full circle. Yep.
Yeah, I made it.
You've made it.
Ma, look, Ma, I made it.
Chat, yeah. Yeah, yep. The AI knows me. The AI recognizes me.
That's right. Yeah. Yep.
Yep.
All right. Well, we should probably end on AI, right? Or do you have other things?
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things is because one of the reason that spawned my video on the topic was that a satire company were now taking their content behind a paywall because they don't want to feed
the
AI engine. Yeah. And that, you know, like I'm sure there will be other companies that will do the same thing. They'll go, well, 100%. I'm not going to feed it for free. Like, yeah, they can try and steal it from going around the paywall and all that sort of thing. You know, it's not, you know, it's possible.
Sure.
Right. But at least I'm not going to give it up for free. Does this mean a lot of people won't be giving up their source code? They won't want to, you know, put their source code on, open source anymore. I'm sure there are people out there who will be thinking that. Right.
I'm sure there are. I don't think it'll have
a big impact. No, but you know, it's like,
I think the other thing too, is that you think about like the things that are feeding back into these engines are often, you know, so like every time you use an AI model, you're training an AI model as well. Right. So you think about like what's the GitHub code mate or whatever it's called. It's like the Copilot. That's it. So GitHub Copilot, you're basically, it's like kind of doing like almost like autocomplete based on whatever you're writing.
Right.
And, you know, mixed reviews, but like generally pretty amazing stuff. And that like, it's an enhancer, right? It basically, it helps you to go faster. You're still kind of creating the ideas, but like you're not as dependent on format and structure, and because it's kind of just auto completing for you. Well, you're also training it, right? And like, so if you want to utilize these things, you're also training these things. And so, yeah, I mean, people are going to, you know, the source material that was out in the public domain might shrink over time, but I think it's really the usage of it that will, and the feedback mechanism around it that ultimately will drive the most growth into it, I think.
Yeah. I just used the engine wrong. I said, what is a good compiler company name? And it told me there are many reputable companies that produce compilers. Some well-known examples include GNU, LLMV.
Yeah.
Never heard of that.
Yeah.
Borland C++. Clang?
Borland
C++.
Nice.
Borland C++.
Clang.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
Did it say GNU is a good name? GNU is a terrible name.
It's
terrible.
Totally. Yep.
Yeah.
But see, it didn't understand what I actually wanted. I needed to, prompt. I needed to do some prompt engineering, which is the term.
Prompt engineering.
Engineering to, so now I have to use the word generate. So I'm going to generate a compiler company name. No. See if we can do that. Okay. Generate a compiler company name. Progressive Compiler Technologies. Streamline Compiler Systems, Innovative Compiler Works. Oh, it's just throwing in the wank words. Optimized Compiler Solutions, Precision Compiler Dynamics. Efficient Compiler Creations, Nimble Compiler Innovations. Oh, this is wankery. Futuristic Compiler Corp.
Yeah.
This is like Douglas Adams kind of like.
And you know what the thing is though, like they're going off all of these terrible names. it is. Yeah, yeah. What's the name of the robot the robot company in Hitchhiker's Guide? The one with the doors that go genuine people personality.
Oh God, don't put me on.
Ask the robot, Dave. It's right there. It's right there.
Next gen compiler technology.
Serious cybernetics. Yeah. That's it. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Advanced compiler.
There's a.
This is terrible.
There is a Pete Holmes thing that I'll link in here. Pete Holmes is a comedian, and he talks about like back in the days when we didn't have Google in our pockets, and now you know ChatGPT in our pockets, right?
Yeah.
And just like the amount of joy that it would bring when you like remembered where a musician was from. It's a really good stand-up bit. I'll get into.
I'm going to, apparently ChatGTP is good with follow-up questions. So I'm going to put more please, but less cringy. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to, but less cringy.
Dave, we could just,
this is great.
We could just do this all
we
day.
We could start
this could just be our podcast.
Live chat.
Podcast. Dave and Chris just put crap into an AI engine and see what comes out.
Sure. Here are some more compiler company names. That might be less cringy.
Just like our audio as well, right?
Here we go. It did actually do it. That might be less cringy. Here we go. See if you agree. CodeWright compilers. Cortex compilers. Nope. Don't mind that one.
Nope.
Cogent compiler systems. Vertex compiler technologies. Blue River. We're getting close to the Moon River. Blue River compiler solutions. River. That's all right.
I like the Cogent one. Cogent wasn't a bad name.
Yeah. Cogent compiler systems.
I mean, when you go through like how people actually name things anyways, this isn't that
different.
No, exactly.
Random shit at a wall and see what sticks. Yeah. And then you sort of mix and match. Oh, I like that word, but you know, I don't like it mixed with this other word.
Exactly.
And you know.
Yeah.
Yep. Hyperion compiler industries. Zenith compiler solutions. Oh god. Okay. Yeah. Radiance compiler technologies, Optimax compiler system. So, you know,
starts a company just based on a compiler, though, too. You know, like that's a bad business.
Oh, boy. Anyway, what it can't do is company logos. I have tried. It cannot do company, Midjourney cannot do company logos. I have not been able to get it to even come close, to even given a simple logo.
Have you tried like, try like line art? So, like, give it a
Okay, line. Okay. I can't do that live here.
Line art?
Yeah, line art. Okay. Yeah. Otherwise, it thinks it's
like vector drawings. Simple shapes, vector drawings. But, like, again, that's like, if you don't know
that's your prompt engineering skills coming. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yep.
So, it's a funky new world we're living in, Dave.
Indeed.
But for now, people are stuck with the meat robots known as Dave and Chris. So in our stupid brains, whatever we can output.
But we have some prompt engineering skills and people are laughing at us for building up our prompt engineering skills. I think it opens a lot of doors. So, yep. Even if you don't, you know, if you're a freelancer or you're just a Joe Blogs engineer at work, having access to, you know, being able to have those killer prompt engineering skills might make you look like a genius.
Might, yeah. Look at your boss.
Can I give you I think I might have mentioned this way, way in the past, but I can't believe, like, all management at my company thought I was an absolute god when I started to take images, like photos, with a Sony, you know, the floppy drive, the Sony Mavica camera, which I've done a video on. I started taking photos, and then you got a 640 by 400 JPEG out of that, right? That was the highest res you got out of it, right? But then I started, then I put the floppy drive into the computer,
I'd
insert images into Word documents as part of the documentation for, like, you know, test procedures and stuff like that. Yeah. They thought I was a god. And all I was doing was
that's a really good point, actually. You were just leading edge by what, like a couple years? But like that leading edge does make you look really good.
Yeah.
And you know, you say that they put you in the basement. It was just actually probably just to make sure you didn't make them look bad by comparison.
Exactly.
You
know, but yeah, like seriously, like, oh my God, the pats on the back. I was like, they were bowing down. Like, you know. Dave is the document god.
Right.
You know? And yeah.
Right.
Unbelievable. Right.
And then eventually it became normal.
That's a great example. Yeah.
This
was in the age when the company was still doing stuff on grid paper and we would actually print out something, get the glue, we'd actually stick it on the grid paper and then we'd photocopy the A3 grid sheets and then we'd have backup documents. You know, it was all
awesome.
It was all still manual. Yeah. Yeah. I was godlike.
Yeah.
Yep. Those were the days.
Those were the days.
Yeah. But you can be godlike now. I'm telling you.
That's right.
Right?
With Midjourney.
Yeah. Seriously, I could just like set up a new Twitter account and just I could picture myself as market myself as an artist and I could put up all these funky, you know, art and people would think I'm a, you know.
I do wonder, you know, like there's a lot of like street fairs around here.
Yeah.
Like in the summer when it's nice out, walking around.
You could sell art. You could stand outside and you could sell all this art that you've generated. You know,
I've printed one.
Really?
I think I told you that. I printed a 40 by 30 inch like huge canvas.
What res are you? Because you've got the top pro account for Midjourney. Resolution does it give you?
This the first feedback my wife gave me was, "Oh, it's kind of blurry, huh?" And I was like, "Yeah, it was way too big for that." So I should have done some more.
Yeah.
But it was already kind of block. Like the style was kind of block anyways.
Right.
But yeah, it's only 1500 by 1000.
Okay. Output, right. Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah. Got to do a little post editing. Yep. All right, man. I got to go. I got to go generate some graphics, I think, here.
All right. Enjoy.
Yeah. Good show about AI.
Yeah. We didn't intend it to. I don't know what it's supposed to be. I thought we were done with No.
Yeah, it's coming back. It's coming back in a big way. 2023. Yep. All right. See you.
Catch you next time.